I just want to take a second and thank Policy Genius. They're supporting today's episode of Success Story. I know we all have kids, we all have families we want to take care of, and I personally checked something off major on my to-do list, life insurance. It's a tough topic, it's really hard to think about, but it's so important. And the hard part was sorting through all the options. Luckily, I found Policy Genius. Policy Genius is an online insurance marketplace that makes getting life insurance surprisingly easy. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Now, knowing my family's protected brings me incredible peace of mind. Don't put off this important decision. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Eufy is sponsoring today's video. They reached out to me. I tested out their video lock. It is a game changer. I'm going to paint a picture for you for why I'm so excited to work with them. So, you're getting home, your arms are loaded with groceries or packages or boxes or everything, and your keys are in your pocket. This drives me nuts. This happens all the time. I upgraded to the Eufy video lock. Fingerprint, tap, I'm inside. And honestly, I also feel way safer. It's got this awesome built-in camera, so whether it's a package delivery or late night Uber order, I see exactly who's there right from my phone. There are no more mystery knocks. And the best part, this thing was such a breeze to set up. There's no wires, there's no drilling. There's also no monthly subscription fees. So if you are done fumbling with your keys, because I definitely am, search for Eufy Video Lock or head over to eufyofficial.com/video lock. Your front door, your sanity. Welcome to Success Story, the most useful podcast in the world. I'm your host, Scott D. Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot Podcast Network. The HubSpot Podcast Network has incredible podcasts like the MarTech Podcast, hosted by Benjamin Shapiro. Each week, the MarTech Podcast tells the stories of world-class marketers who use technology to create lasting success with their businesses and careers. If any of these topics sound interesting to you, I want you to go check out the MarTech Podcast, how science is changing advertising, how to set up a CRM so you actually use it, private equity's take on digital transformation, why big social is focused on newsletters. If these are topics that resonate with you, go listen to the MarTech Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or you can go to hubspot.com/podcast network and listen to it there. Today, you are going to hear me on the S2 podcast hosted by Stephanie Saunders. We spoke about how to podcast. This is super meta, but I really hope you enjoy it. Let's jump right into it. Me on the S2 show hosted by Stephanie Saunders.
You're listening to the S2 show, a podcast where you can listen, learn, and be inspired by professionals. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Stephanie Saunders. On the S2 show, I interview some of the world's number one experts. My goal is to help you by giving you a glimpse inside the climb to their success and give you a sneak peek into our guests' behind-the-scenes stories to help shed light on the journey. After each episode, you should have actionable steps to apply on your road to building your empire. Expect to hear from real estate moguls, founders, CEOs, authors, and influencers. Let's get started. Welcome to the show, Scott Clary.
Thank you for having me on. I'm super, super excited to be here.
I'm new and you're like the pro with your 20,000 downloads per episode. So I'll show you around Miami. I'll introduce you to a bunch of people. You teach me how to be a pro at podcasting.
Deal. Sounds good. I like that. I'm down with that. This is half the reason why I came down to Miami. So I can network, so I can meet people. And then I'll give you all the marketing advice. I'll give you all the podcast growth tips. I'll tell you what I'm doing with my show right now that's successful and what isn't successful. Okay. And but you do a lot of this stuff anyways. I see your brand on social. You're killing it. Like don't sell yourself short.
But you know what? It's all so new for me I was the consumer. I never had any interest and I never understood the value. But I was a consumer, right?
Yeah.
So when the pandemic happened, it was like, I was forced to make a decision. Like, am I going to go ghost for a year and a half? Or am I going to like shove myself into everyone's face?
So that's the only reason. So listen, there's so many things to learn in marketing. It's like, it could be like a rabbit hole, you know?
It can also, But there's also endless amounts of things to learn, because not only do you have all your traditional things that I don't even know a lot about, like I'm not an expert in print. I'm not an expert in television. Like these are like television commercials and the traditional marketing and advertising. I'm more an expert in digital and social. And I'm not even an expert. I'm constantly learning. And that's so difficult. Right. There's always new things to learn about. So I would say like the number one thing, the number one takeaway from anything you hear today that we chat about, it's that there's no end game. There's no finish line. And if you ever think there's a finish line, that's when you'll start to fail as a marketer.
Yes.
Because you just won't get it. You won't get the next thing, right?
Sure. What's interesting though about that point is then when do you find, like, I get so excited when I'm learning new things, right? Mm-hmm. So I found like to be so intrigued, which is, it's really fun. So that means, you know, you're liking it, right? They say you have to have fun doing what you're doing. So like, I have fun learning all this new stuff, but then every day it's like, oh, sales funnel this, like click this, that. It's like, so then I can't sleep. Because I'm like, oh, this thing, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I just found this new thing and I'm up and I'm like reading and like, I'm married. Like I'm also, I want to be a good wife. It's a new thing. And like, I don't know how
your,
to turn
your mindset it off. Your mindset is the perfect mindset for somebody who wants to build their own thing. Cause you're curious. You're super curious.
Right. But and it's dangerous.
It is, because you get obsessed with it. You get upset. I'm the same way. I get obsessed with learning stuff.
Yeah,
and it just like you have to manage your spouse, if you have kids. I don't have kids yet, but like, you know, one day you're gonna have kids, and you have to manage all that because that's also why people say like if you love being like an entrepreneur, so to speak, and you love building things and you love learning new things, that's why you should try and do it when you're younger so that you have some success and then you know it works and then you can outsource. You can pay people to do things for you because you don't have to do it all yourself. You don't have to learn all yourself.
Sure. And you know how to balance it. So
you know how to balance. Yeah.
We won't say you don't get as excited, but you've been through that like really excited phase. Already.
Yes. Yeah. You'll still get as excited. You'll always get as excited. And, you know, I know people that have exited companies, entrepreneurs that have exited companies, and they never have to work another day in their life. And they'll sit around for a year and they'll just start building something again.
Right.
It's a personality trait. I think entrepreneurship at its core is personality.
Right.
That's what's success.
So let's talk about that because you have a 9-to-5 and you're doing all of these other things.
Yes. Do you want me to give you a rundown?
I do.
Do you want to get a rundown on record?
Before you do, what do you think that says about yourself? Because you probably don't need to have a 9-to-5, but do you think that you like the challenge of having the layers of the different options of businesses? What's the difference?
That's a really great question. So let's be candid with this. The 9-to-5 that I have pays very well. It's a very comfortable 9-to-5. And I don't, you know, I don't bite the hand that feeds me. I still make sure that I'm doing that 9-to-5 very well. And that usually means that right now I can manage the side hustles and the podcasts and the writing content and all of that because I don't have kids. If I had kids right now, I don't think I would be a very responsible father doing as many things as I'm doing. But that being said, so why do I keep the 9-to-5? Well, the 9-to-5, when I first got into the 9-to-5, and if you go through my career, it's been working for companies. I took a step back. I did what I think you're doing now, building your own marketing firm. You're doing, you know, your own thing. And then I actually went back into working for a company. The name of the company was Excitem at the time, and they wanted somebody to help bring software products to market because they were looking at a deal with Grass Valley at the time. She said, listen, Scott, can you just like show Grass Valley that our products have value? We're a team of developers. We want to bring these like more enterprise products to market. And it was a challenge. It was a lot of fun. And there was a lot of opportunity there because I was really in with the founder, the, you know, co-founders, actually CTO and a product founder, and they didn't have really anybody who had a strong sales or marketing background. So a lot of opportunity. And that's a great, you know, that's a great notch on my belt. That's a great add on my resume, right? Like be able to build a startup and be able to exit. And just recently we did exit. So, you know, we did exit and now I'm an employee of Grass Valley and I'm still building that out. So it was part challenge. at the time when I took that challenge on, my side hustles weren't really making any money at all. Mm-hmm. So it was also a necessity too. Like it was like, do I want to, I was entrepreneur, I was doing my own consulting, and then I pivoted back into working for somebody. And it was just about the fact that I loved entrepreneurship. I loved building my own thing, but I also realized that maybe I was working a lot and I wasn't working with the right partners when I was doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. And I found that this isn't working. Mm-hmm. This version, this iteration of entrepreneurship for me isn't working. I know that I want to build my own thing in the future, but I don't think this, I don't see the vision. I don't see the long-term. So, okay, let me take that energy and that entrepreneurial spirit, whatever you want to call it, right, and inject it into a company that I can sort of align with. We're all aligned. We can really, you know, really crank it up, really ramp it up, like, and then, and do something incredible. And that's what I've been doing for the past 2.5 years. Right. And now we hit that pinnacle. We reached that point where we exited. That's sort of that's what every entrepreneur wants to do. I wasn't a founder, but I was the person who was leading the commercial, you know, all the revenue, all the growth, all of that. And so that was a lot of fun for me. It was a big challenge,
right?
But it pushed me. I learned new things. And if I ever do something in the future, and by the way, learning the things while growing that, you'd be hard pressed to say that didn't also help me grow my own things, because right, I learned the lessons. I see what works. I see what works at scale, because now I have budget. So I can test that scale, and then I can apply those learnings, of course, to the product that I'm, you know, actually the company that I'm working for, but also apply those lessons to things that I'm trying to grow myself. How to market newsletters, how to market podcasts, how to, you know, publish the best content on social. So you learn with the company, you learn, and you can apply that to yourself if you choose. Not everybody chooses to build their own brand or do their own thing, but I do. And now I'm at a point where we're growing really quickly. The company that acquired us really values my team and myself. And I'll see where it takes me. And you made a good point. I don't know when that point is where you just say you go full time into doing your own thing. But we're growing at a rate right now so quickly with its broadcast SaaS, its broadcast software. So it's software meant for the broadcast industry. The broadcast industry is a very legacy, old school industry, and it's ripe for disruption. So because I'm there and I'm seeing it happen in real time, it's hard to walk away from that because it's so exciting. And you know, it's you a know huge something? Career story.
There's something here to be said about not being afraid to, you know, take the opportunities that are in front of you. Like, I think we all get set on this like mindset where it's like, no, I have to pursue this because I want to be independent. But it's like, it is okay. So I often talk about how I don't like 9-to-5s, but I mm-hmm. did the 10 years and I have this resume and I have these relationships that have benefited me. So you took the opportunity or are yeah. taking it to have those names with you to make your mark in that space, and you're just growing. I admire being able to fulfill both roles, because not a lot of people are able to understand both sides of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that because I have the entrepreneurial ability within this company, and they trust me, and they value me, and I'm allowed to do what I want to do, and what I'm doing is successful, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
If I didn't do it, I'm sure I could double down on the other things that are making me money and grow them quicker. But right now, in my mind, I look at the ROI of both, and the ROI of the other things, so the podcast, the newsletter, the personal brand, the whatever I want to build for myself in the future, that's only going to be greater if I have an incredible career story to go with it. You look at the people that are the most prolific, like I look at like Tom Bilyeu, who did like Quest Nutrition, and then he grew that, I guess exited, and now he's a personality. Yeah. I still want to chase a very big career win, and I have had significant career success, so that's not the point. But this is like I'm in it and I'm living it. I just don't want to let it go just yet. And if it doesn't come to anything, then I do have other things that I could double right. down on, and we'll see. But right now, it's exciting.
That's great advice, though. You don't often hear this perspective anymore. I feel like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur and like sticking with it, even if I'm failing, you know what I mean? And yeah. then what, like, you know, it failed miserably and you don't want to have your tail between your legs and go to a job because you don't want to seem like you're a failure, but it's like, hey, this is part of it. It's okay.
It is part of it.
You can do that.
It's 100% okay.
Yeah.
And so, I would actually recommend that.
So how has podcasting really been for you? Because you've really crushed it. You said you have 20,000 downloads an episode now. Mm-hmm. How long did it take for you to get to that point?
Roughly 2 years to get to that point. I spent a fair amount of money trying to grow and market. That's a fair amount of time. Mm-hmm. And then I also had the advantage of knowing how to book great guests, knowing how to sell myself, my podcast. I come from a sales and marketing background, knowing how to disseminate content across all social platforms. Mm-hmm. So I had that advantage already. And I was already good at doing the sales and marketing aspect of any product. Because if you know how to sell yourself, you know how to sell a product, you know how to market a product, you can apply those learnings quite quickly and you can really increase your ramp time. Mm-hmm. And then that's just the marketing piece, but also getting, like, for example, I think I got Guy Kawasaki on my podcast on, like, in the first 10 episodes. I just know how to cold email quite well because I'm from a sales background. So I was cold emailing, like, Guy Kawasaki, Grant Cardone, Anthony Scaramucci. You bring that clout on, and because I'm great at cold emailing, I know how to get people's attention. I know how to bring them in. I know how to sell them on the concept. I could bring them in early. I could get their names on the show. And then all of a sudden, you start to get that ball rolling. So that also helped a lot. But it's about focusing on it too. Like, I don't know the stats, but you look at anybody who talks about podcast success. Mm-hmm. I think there's, say a million podcasts. I have no idea how many podcasts are up. Sure. Say a million podcasts. It's something like, 1% of those podcasts have more than two episodes or some insane stat like that. Right. So is it, I know what I'm doing, so I could ramp up quicker. I could get better guests quicker. I could market it quicker. But somebody just doing a podcast and learning everything from the ground up and not knowing anything about sales or marketing, if they just stuck with it for 500 episodes, they would still have considerable success. Mm-hmm. And that's where people always fail. It's mm-hmm. because they just give up. And you see a lot of entrepreneurs speak about this quite often. The founder of AppSumo, Noah Kagan, he did a YouTube video. I think the video was called, it's a great video to check out. It's called, How Did You Make Your First Million? And he's interviewing entrepreneurs, how they made their first million. And a theme that keeps repeating is, well, I was making nothing. And then all of a sudden, overnight, I made everything. There's this hockey stick growth curve when you've put in, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 years of effort. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, all those results start compounding and you start to see the success very rapidly, very quickly. And any entrepreneur is going to tell you that in any industry.
Right.
A lot of it is just sticking with it.
And to segue on that, it's funny. Are you on Clubhouse?
I am. I'm trying.
I think it might have died, you know, like I think it was like really all the hype and rage for like a couple of weeks or months maybe. But I was on once and Grant Cardone was on there and someone asked him the question, like, what did you do after you made your first million? Mm-hmm. And he said, I got scared. And it was funny. So you talk about growth, right? So consistency. You get where you wanted to be and then you feel like, oh, I made it. And then all of a sudden you get scared because you don't know what's next. So he said that he couldn't reach the next hurdle and he wanted to, you know, make a few million. So he got rid of all his money and basically invested it. So it was making money itself, right?
Yeah.
And he acted as if he was broke again so he could reach the next level. So, but just an example of just keeping it going to consistently grow so you don't get comfortable and stop or give up, right?
I agree. And I actually love that. I love that mindset. It's like he almost like had to have like this urgency in being able to create money again and to be able to create value. And he just couldn't have that. I guess for him, it was hard for him to like self-motivate himself without that. I don't have money in the bank, looking at my checking account, you know, it's in the negative or whatever kind of fear. That's very interesting.
Right. And I don't really, you know, it's funny. I haven't heard Grant much and I don't know if he has a podcast. I've heard him on some episodes before, but I think that real-time communication, mm-hmm. like listening to someone. So on a podcast, you really get the sense of who they are in a different way. So when I heard him say that, I was like, wow, like that was such great advice to give to someone who's like, I've reached this certain point. So I really enjoy podcasting. I think people are starting to be more aware since the pandemic of the value in podcasting.
It's just more real. It's less edited. everything that I put out except podcasts, unfortunately, it's an edited version of myself, right? The LinkedIn posts, the YouTube videos that are, you know, I record for an hour, cut it down to 10 minutes. The reels, TikTok, like all that, it's all edited versions of a person. Yeah. And you try and put yourself, you know, when you edit yourself down, regardless of whether or not you're trying to, you'll always end up putting the best version of yourself forward because you want that person to see it. You want to cut the fluff. But right. With podcasts, with long form content, with like live content, there's no cutting, there's no editing. It's just super raw. And I think that people see value in that because they get to know the person versus you can't fake it. You can't fake it for an hour. You can't fake it for 2 hours. You can't fake it live all the time. Right. And you can unfortunately fake it in short form tweets or you can have this like version of yourself you put out into the world. But when you talk to somebody for an hour or two or whatever, you look at the stuff on Joe Rogan, like that's the person. That's it. They get shit-faced, they get drunk. And they just talk, and that's who that person is. And I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I measure people. Like, I just like talking to people. Yeah. I just like getting to know them like one-on-one, and you can't do that in short form.
Right, so I'm a newer podcaster, okay? Mm-hmm. And you're gonna teach me how to be a pro. How many episodes do you have, by the way?
107 as of yesterday, yeah.
Congrats.
Well, actually 107 published. I have about 150 recorded.
Right. Cause you do, you pre-record them and then release them, which is great. A great tip I learned in the very beginning. I think I have like 30 ready, but then each time I listen, then I'm like, was this in the beginning? Cause I'm still doing that same thing. I got better.
Cause I've gone the other end of the spectrum and I've pre-recorded too many. And then you end up pissing off the guests.
That's what I think I've done.
Yeah, I've done that too.
What do you recommend?
You set expectations.
Sure.
And I record about 10. I try now, and not, like, I just told you I have 150. I have like 40 that I have to post. So obviously I'm not doing a good job of it. I'm trying to push off guests and I'm telling them like, okay, just like, you know, September, October, I'll try and record you. But you just set expectations and you just communicate. Like at the beginning, I recorded really great episodes with great people. And I was embarrassed because I knew that I had like another 30 episodes to play and I just would ignore their emails when they're trying to bug me.
Right.
And it was just like this like self-conscious thing. And then I'm like, listen, I just started emailing like, listen, I'm sorry. I just recorded too many. You're going to go out at this date. And they're like, fine, no problem.
Right.
But just try, obviously respectful of the person.
Right.
I also asked them like, is there a book release? Is there something timely? If not, if it's evergreen and you don't care, then fine. I'll push you a little bit out. But if there's something that's important to you, then we'll work around that schedule. And I try not to do more. Not when I get through all the ones that I've recorded, I'm going to try not to do more than 10 at a time. Just so if I record with you, you're going to be maybe like a month and a half max.
Right. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So a lot of people that I know that are like, why are you doing this podcast? Like, what's going on here? So they're like, well, you know, Joe Rogan, he just like comparing me to Joe Rogan. I'm like, listen.
He's the OG.
Joe Rogan. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the funniest thing that is where like most people are referencing podcasts to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, this is unfair. You know, like he's like a master. I am not Joe Rogan. Stop trying to tell me, you know, you should do this like what he does. So,
well, yeah, you should also have your own studio, your own staff. You should
have
somebody doing live, you know, mixing the audio like, well, one day.
But I do like the studio vibe. And I think there's something to be said, like when I do these on Zoom, it's hard sometimes because even if I'm enjoying the conversation, like I have lights in front of me, like I have a screen, like I go a little cross-eyed. So you're going to be in a studio soon, right?
That's the plan. So all my episodes right now have been recorded virtually. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through every tool. I've tried everything and some I like, some I don't like. But the goal will be to move everything in person, in a studio, get people in, pour them a drink if they drink and just relax, chill. You know, I think that's the way because that's the best way to do it.
There's
that is the best
that you
way.
You can't replace about that in-person conversation.
No, you just can't.
Yeah.
You just can't as much as you try and have like the pre-phone calls, like warm up to the person.
Right.
And some people are like, you're very charismatic. It's easy to talk to you. There's some people that are just hard to talk to, that are just Brilliant people, but just brilliant. They're not comfortable, right? No. And you don't know the people.
Right.
So,
right. It's true. So what are some of those tools though that you use? Because I keep hearing about, you need to mm-hmm. know how to live stream. So you can go in and out and Zoom and make like the person's face bigger. And I'm just like, really? Like what?
So
like,
I don't do that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of production. Tools that I use. So I have, right now I'm in the middle of moving, so I don't have anything, but normally I'll just have like a newer, like lights on a stage. Like I have two, just lights. I record everything through a Brio webcam. I used to record through a DSLR, but this was just easier and it's lightweight. It records just fine.
Yeah.
What's the name of the damn? A Yeti mic, just a regular Yeti mic. You're using a Shure. That's another really good brand.
Yeah, you think Yeti is good? I never tried it.
It's just easy. It's just super easy. It's a USB mic. I think that if you're just starting out, just go with a USB mic. You don't need to get like a mic with like a mixer or an amp. That like that's overkill. Like don't do that to yourself. It's already difficult enough. Yeah. Right now I'm recording with Riverside. I was with Zoom, but Riverside does 1080 recording. And also what it does, so right now we're on a call and what Zoom is doing is compressing the audio, compressing the video. So when it's done, it'll be good, but it won't be great. Whereas Riverside, it records audio on my end, it records audio on your end, video on my end, video on your end, and then it combines them after the fact. So it's like we're sitting in the same room in terms of quality, but that's probably the best that I've found so far. And I've tried a lot.
Yeah, that's cool. And you do it through your computer on the Brio?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just on my Mac, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard some people will use like a TV screen and they'll like live stream so that the other person is on another screen and then it seems so complex. I'm not very techie. So I'm like, this cord, what cord is this? I don't know how to do this.
You can have like, what they're probably doing is they're probably doing like dual monitors so that they can, like right now I'm on a laptop. I have my little Brio that I plug in, but like, I have to keep reminding myself to look up because if I look at your face, then I'm not looking at the camera, like camera, your face. Right. So if you have a big monitor, it could be noticeable. Probably on this one, it's not so noticeable.
Right.
But if you want to get a more professional setup and you had a studio or you had like a home studio, you could do two monitors. So like when you're looking at somebody, it looks like you're actually, when you're looking at somebody, it looks like you're looking at them and doesn't look like you're looking away from the camera. But I don't do that. Well, I don't find there's any point in it.
I'm looking forward to the studio. I want to come into the studio when you have it set up. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm originally from Toronto, right? So it's going to be unfortunate. You can't get a lot of guests in Toronto. So I'm hoping that I can get some more in-person, some really great people in-person in a studio in Florida, in Miami. That would be perfect. And I think that that's, you know, next steps for the podcast.
So what's up with Toronto and not very many guests? What do you mean? Like there are not a lot of people in Toronto?
No. You don't get like the big names coming through Toronto as often, right? It's not a New York. It's not an LA. Sure. You might get them once in a while, but if you're talking about big business personalities from the US,
right? Sure.
You don't get them as much.
So I want to talk about Toronto and the whole thing. Because I talked to someone the other day and they were like, I can't leave the country to travel because we're not getting vaccines here in Canada and we're on lockdown again. So what's the deal? Because Canada's like super ahead of times in a lot of ways. I mean,
Canada's great for a lot of things.
Yeah.
Canada is great. You know, you talk about everyone refers to like healthcare, everything's covered and whatnot. This is incredible. Right now in Canada, we're running behind in terms of vaccination. Our supply chain is not great compared to the US. We don't have domestic vaccine producers. So because everything's slower, it's just been a lot longer of a lockdown. It's been no restaurants, no haircutters, nothing for, I don't know, like almost 2 years now. It's been tough. And there's been periods where it's lightened up, but ultimately people in Canada are just over it.
Yeah.
Like they're just over it right now. And, you know, as a Canadian, you can probably go down in New York, they're vaccinating tourists. Yep. In Florida, they're vaccinating tourists. You can just go to the States and just get vaccinated and keep living your life. Or you can wait another 6 months in your house in Toronto or in Canada, rather. And it's unfortunate. Yeah. Because I don't like, you know, born and raised in Canada, but they're just, they're dropping the ball right now. And it's unfortunate, yeah. But it is what it is.
Sure. But I was just for the first time in a gym without a mask on yesterday. So I'm so thankful, but like, we're all kind of slow in our own ways, but like, I think we're inching towards the end of this, finally.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Like I was very, very fortunate. I had, over the course of the pandemic, I collected a whole bunch of fitness equipment in my house in Toronto. So I was okay. I got some stuff off Facebook. I got some stuff off, like I got just the most random, whatever was left over in terms of fitness equipment. Now, of course I can go work out in a gym. It's a weird feeling, but it's a good feeling.
It's amazing.
It's a really good feeling. I miss that a lot.
I was working out outside in a parking lot. So we have like a lot of the people, and I live in a condo, a lot of people, we use the same trainer. And so he was doing like this rotation back to back in the parking lot. So you'd see your neighbor, you know, everyone like bundled up trying to stay, like, and we were in the elements of South Florida for all seasons. We had a real winter this year for Florida. It was like 40 degrees in the morning. And so
that's cold enough.
Right. Yeah. To work out. And so to be in the gym yesterday, we're like looking in the mirror. I'm like, man, I need a haircut. Like what am I wearing?
Well, so, I did a whole Under Armour order just because I was like wearing the most ridiculous stuff to work out. And I had to like look normal again in real life in public. So that's something that I've been just like getting used to now. But do you not have, you don't have, cause I know in LA they have a whole bunch of outdoor gyms that popped up.
You know what?
They don't do that here.
If we had them, they would probably be near where you are in like on Las Olas. I think there's one gym that's on a rooftop, and then or they'd be in like Miami Beach, but they closed. You remember they closed the beaches here in South Florida.
That's
for a lot of the pandemic, because that was where everyone was, you know, obviously going to gather and not pay attention to rules.
Yeah. So yeah.
Have that.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, well, I wouldn't know any better because I wasn't here, but that, like now it's just nice because you can go into a gym. So
yeah,
I miss that a lot. I'm very into health, wellness, working out. Like my whole life I've played sports, and obviously I don't play anything anymore. But for me, you know, part of my professional life, I need to be able to have like an outlet, like something to go do, something physical to go do. I used to play in Canada, played a lot of hockey, played rugby in high school, played a lot of tennis too. And obviously always just like working out in a gym wherever I traveled. And that's honestly, I feel like for people that are stuck in condos, don't have access to work out, I don't know how you could do it. If you were somebody who cared about fitness and health and whatnot, I think it's very difficult, like mentally and physically.
Right. What happens
on your energy levels too?
What happens to your business, even like just your production and your effort, if you're not going to the gym for like a week?
See, I've always focused on finding a way to work out. So, you know, it's funny.
So it doesn't even happen. Is what you're saying.
It doesn't happen. It really doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because even when I was, so during the move, during COVID, we went through a move. So I was in a condo at the start of COVID, moved into a house, filled the basement with gym equipment, and then moved again. So when I was in the condo, when COVID first started, they shut down the gym, of course. And I ordered some weights, like some really, really, because nothing was available from any fitness store. So I had to order some, like, you know, weights from China, like some really, really crappy weights. I remember I had a metal bar from an IKEA shelf, and I tried to put equal 24 packs of water bottles into two gym bags and put it on each side of the IKEA shelf bar. And that was like my deadlifts, my curls, like I was doing like little bench presses in our second bedroom. And I've always just found a way because, and it sounds nuts until you talk to somebody who's always worked out, because it's almost like a little bit of an addiction to work out. But days that I don't work out, I'm lethargic, I'm tired. By mid-afternoon, like you just don't want to do anything. And you just, it's like no endorphins, no serotonin, like nothing, because you aren't getting that exercise. So you're eating, you're feeling like crap. Yeah. I don't know how to measure the issue, like the detriment to not working out, but I know it's there.
Right.
It's
significant. That's some serious dedication right there. I feel like this whole experience with the pandemic, like really tested everyone who is physically fit or wants to be physically fit. Because if you're going to do it, you can make it happen, but you have to be creative.
You got to be creative. You got to be creative. You got to be resourceful. I've never used Facebook Marketplace in my life, but I couldn't find anything else anywhere else. So for the first time on a Facebook Marketplace, found some people that were selling their old gym equipment at like a, you know, a 10x markup. And I'm like, whatever. To me, that's worth it.
I bought this bike, you know, like a little bike for the patio. And so grateful to find it was like $100 from Amazon. And I went on like a couple of days later because a friend of mine said, oh, you need one of these, or I need one of these. Please get me one. It was like $700, like a week later, because it was through the roof. Everyone wanted it.
I know. Well, you were looking at like weights, like little dumbbells or whatever. And they were like $100 per dumbbell.
It's crazy.
You're right. I think that that's probably the most important thing during the pandemic. It was focusing on like keeping your mental health at an all-time high and not sinking into some sort of depression. For me, that was physical activity, physical fitness.
Yeah. When I'm sick for a couple of days, I'm extra miserable because I can't work out. And I try to work out anyway, even though I know I can't. And it's just torture. So I'm like depressed because I'm not getting that action my brain needs.
100, it's so funny that when you talk to somebody who actually is into working out, like the stupid shit they do in this. But like every time I've ever had a surgery, it's like I try and go back earlier. Like anytime a doctor's like, don't lift weights, I'm like, okay, whatever. Like I'll lift around it. Like, don't worry about it. Like,
oh, I just replaced my shoulder. It's been a week. I'm fine.
We'll do legs at least. Whatever. Not a big deal. Also, you know.
So you guys who are physically fit and work out like this are the same. Like
I know. I know.
A week goes by. You're in a sling. You have stitches in your arm. You're like, I can handle a couple of bench presses. I got this. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
But I get it.
I'm sure there's like a psychological condition. Like it's not, you're not all right there, but like, whatever. It is what it is. You know, I've seen worse habits.
It's very true.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. That's so funny.
But listen, this has been awesome. I cannot wait until you're settled in South Florida.
We're
going to have to do this again in a studio.
We'll do it in the studio for sure. I'll give you, we spent half the time talking about pandemic and working out, and we didn't even go into podcasting tips and whatnot, but we'll do that. We'll do that too. We'll do like a 2.0.
Yeah, but you know what? You gave some really valuable tips on kind of how you got started and what you've done and some of the resources too, but let's definitely do a 2.0 for sure.
I'll give you one more really great tip that's worked well for me because it's applicable to anybody marketing anything. So when you want to market something, say I want to market a podcast, where do I market it? Yeah, you go across all the normal channels, you know, social, whatnot, but market it where your listeners already are. So I have a podcast, I'm getting other podcast hosts, I'm trying to go on shows, I'm getting them to shout out my podcast,
right?
And we're doing shout out trades for podcasts and whatnot. If I want to market my newsletter, I'm advertising in other people's newsletters. I'm just asking them to do like a swap. Can we just for 1 week, I speak about your newsletter, you speak about my newsletter? Because you're not, when you're marketing anything, you're marketing the product, but you're also marketing the medium. So if I'm marketing a podcast, I have to sell my own podcast. I have to get you to buy into it, but I don't want to have to convert you to becoming a podcast listener and then liking my podcast. I want to take people that are already podcast listeners and like my podcast because that's way easier. Mm-hmm. So anything I've ever marketed, ever, podcast, newsletter, anything, you just try and find people that are doing that thing, listening to that thing, consuming that thing somewhere else and then just convert them into what you're doing. It's just a way easier way to market.
That's great advice. And you also recommend having sponsors.
Yeah, well, that's what pays the bills. So I do recommend having sponsors. I think that's a very, other tools that I use for sponsors right now, I don't have a dedicated sales team. I use AdvertiseCast. Mm-hmm. They put your podcast up. They have a sales team that finds you deals. Of course, if you get big enough, people will come to you and they do as well. But that's one way to sort of get your sales off the ground with the podcast. I'll think of some more, but yeah. I can't think off the top of my head, but that's one that you should check out. If you do have a podcast, go to AdvertiseCast, and no affiliate, no sponsor. This is something I like to use and it works well.
Right. But one thing you just said there with collaboration is basically key, but know the mediums to collaborate with. And it's like in any marketing, it's all about collaborating.
It's all because, there's two ways to get your message. Well, I guess three ways. You can pay for it. You can have organic reach on your social, or you can just collaborate. Yep. And collaborating makes the most sense because what are you giving when you collaborate? You're giving, it's free real estate in your own show,
right?
Or, you're talking about somebody's show or whatever. You're providing value to somebody else. They'll provide value back, but it's not costing you anything. Mm-hmm. Because if I go, do a swap with a podcaster and I say, okay, so we're going to have, I'm going to talk about your podcast for 30 seconds at the beginning of my show. You're going to talk about my podcast for 30 seconds at the beginning of your show. And we both have audiences of 10,000 people. You know how much it would cost to get 10,000 dedicated podcast listeners, just podcast listeners, to actually care about my show if I had to go through Facebook ads or something like that? It's very expensive, right? It's extremely expensive. And that, in theory, should be free. And that's just you setting that up. You just reaching out to people.
Right.
That's it.
That's a good one. Well, we're doing a number two. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com. joinjoindesign.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive. And I bet you we've all been there. And maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay. And what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real. There are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks or accounting professional to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay. Thank you so much, Indeed, for sponsoring Success Story. For all business leaders out there, Indeed is a lifesaver. See, we're always driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You're going to ditch the busy work and you're going to use Indeed for scheduling, screening, messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Clary. Just go to Indeed.com/Clary right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Clary. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.